Stand and hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance,
To the flag of
the United States
of America and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Do we have the roll call?
Yes. Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Rowe.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
And Director Yeo.
Here.
You have a quorum with 8 directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items too late? Received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
All right. This is the time for visitor participation. Do we have anyone who would like to speak? I'm not seeing any hands.
No hands raised.
Okay, I'm not seeing any either. All right. Then let's move to the public hearing to consider increasing the basin production percentage for the remainder of the fiscal year of 2022-23.
Yes.
General Manager, can you present the staff's recommendation?
I'd be happy to, but I will ask Mr. John Kennedy to give that presentation to the board this evening. So, John.
Okay.
Madam President, you want to open the public hearing first, though?
Sure. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Let's open the public hearing. Now, John, you can.
Okay. Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. So tonight is a public hearing to consider increasing the basin production percentage. On January 18th, the board set the public hearing for tonight. And as we talked about, hold on here. So as we talked about back in January, groundwater pumping and replenishment assessment revenues are going to be less than budgeted. The reason for less groundwater pumping than what we had expected was we have declining total water demands, which is in general is good. People are becoming more efficient with their water use. We've had delays in constructing PFAS treatment systems and getting wells back online. And then we have a fourth round, a new testing order by the state to test an additional 39 wells. And we do expect some of those wells probably test above the 10 parts per trillion level. And so we expect we'll have a few more wells shut down, which decreases groundwater pumping. So we estimated the pumping would be around 295,000 acre feet by the 19 producers. And that was going to generate around $164 million of RA revenue. We're currently predicting that groundwater pumping will decline to about 263,000 acre feet. And you can see replenishment assessment revenues will decline by about $18 million there. So when we set the budget, predicting groundwater pumping can be difficult. It's each of the 19 producers ultimately decide how much groundwater they want to pump. Now, when we set the basin production percentage, that gives us a good ballpark estimate of what groundwater pumping will be for the year. But our estimate can easily be 10 to 20,000 acre feet off just because of how the year plays out and decisions that the groundwater producers make. And then more recently with PFAS, having wells turned off because of PFAS testing or wells coming back online after PFAS treatment systems are constructed, that has just added to the difficulty of trying to get a real accurate number on what groundwater pumping will be for the year. So we will have less revenues than expected, but this has happened before. It's not the end of the world. And this is why we carry reserves. We have over $20 million of cash reserves that will get us through the year with no problem. So we still can take an action here tonight to increase the BPP, to increase groundwater pumping a little bit and get a little more RA revenue than we otherwise would have gotten. So,
and John, just to be clear, we're talking about the current fiscal year that we're in. So the current fiscal year ending June 30th, 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. So increasing the basin production percentage requires a public hearing that we're having tonight. The current BPP is 77%. And we've estimated we'd like to increase it up to 85% for the whole year. Now, because of how the District Act is worded, we would be setting the BPP for the remaining 5 months at 96.3%. So what that does is we would have a 77% BPP for the first 7 months of the fiscal year, and 96.3% BPP for the remaining 5 months. But when you do the calculation, it's an 85% BPP for the whole year. And that's what we would use and what the producers would manage to. So, what's happening right now, especially because of PFAS, is that increasing the BPP is not going to significantly increase groundwater pumping as it would have if we didn't have the PFAS issue. So right now we have six producers with PFAS issues, and they probably won't even pump up to the current 77% BPP. So there's nothing they can do. We also right now have eight producers who are already going to be pumping 90 to 100%. They're already planning that. And so raising the BPP is not really going to change what they're already planning to do. So then you have the remaining five producers. And when we look at them, they're pretty small, or they don't have significant excess groundwater pumping capacity to fully take advantage of the higher BPP. So we've estimated that pumping is only going to increase by about an additional 2,000 acre feet, and that'll get us around an additional $1.1 million of RA revenue. So it's not a lot, but it's something, and it's still worth doing. So the good news of less groundwater pumping is that for the basin's accumulated overdraft, we're going to refill the basin a little more than what we were expecting for this fiscal year. And you can see by the red line there on the far right, we're predicting the accumulated overdraft will decrease by in the area of 50,000 acre feet. So we're going to be increasing supplies in the groundwater basin by about 50,000 acre feet because of the less pumping that's occurring this year. And we're also assuming we'll have an average year for rainfall. And we're doing very good with rainfall so far. So hopefully we'll have at least an average year. So that concludes the presentation. And the recommendation is to increase the basin production percentage from 77% to 96.3% for the remaining 5 months of the fiscal year, resulting in an average BPP of 85% for the entire year. And that concludes the presentation, and we can answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Do we have any members of the public who would like to speak? Not seeing.
I see no hands.
I see no hands, okay. Next, board members, do you have any comments or questions? I'm still seeing no hands. Anybody? Don't see any. All right, so I'll close the public hearing.
President Green, I had a quick question. Sure. Just for John, something he had said that we wanted to increase the BPP for the year. You mean for this year going forward for 5 months, right? To the 94.3%, is it? You just mean for 5 months, right? We can't retroactively change it for the year, correct? I just want to make sure I understood it correctly.
Yes, 96.3% for the remaining 5 months, but that effectively gives us a BPP of 85% for the entire year.
Okay, understood. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't see any other hands. All right, Director Yeo.
Thank you, President Green. So thank you, John. And so the raising the BPP is just for the five producers that are able to pump up the 85%, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's why it's only 2,000.
Right.
Okay. But it still needs to be done. Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I see no more hands. So I'll close the public hearing. Do we have a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second Director Amezcua's motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. May we have roll call?
Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? Director Rowe?
Yes.
Director Sheldon? Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
That motion carries 8-0 with Directors Nguyen and Sheldon absent.
I see.
If you could please register my vote as a yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
That please. Carries 9-0.
Yes. Okay. Perfect. Next, we'll move on to the consent calendar, items 2 through 8. Do we have a motion?
I would move approval.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Okay, roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? Director Rowe?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
That motion carries 9-0 with Director Nguyen absent.
Okay. We'll move on to item 9, an update on research and development activities.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. We try to inform the board at least once a year, twice a year on our activities in our research department. And it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Megan Plumley, who will be giving this presentation to the board this evening. Megan.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. Let me share my slides. I can figure it out. Okay, are you seeing the full screen mode?
Yes.
Perfect.
You're not in slideshow yet, Megan.
Oh, you're not seeing the full screen?
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm not. I'm not sure how others are seeing it.
I see a slide that says update on R&D activities.
Mm-hmm. Let me try one more time. So it goes edge to edge to your screen.
Oh, okay.
You see it larger. Maybe this?
There you go.
Okay. All right, so thank you. Oh, now it's not advancing for me. Let me try again. Do you see the next slide that has a white report on it?
No.
No.
I guess I might just have to share it where you can kind of see the slides along the edge because I can't get it to.
That's fine.
To show. Let me just minimize it. Bigger there. All right. Now, when I advance, does it go to the next screen for you, slide two?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's try again. All right. So, so I give this update usually about every 6 months or so. Kind of coinciding with the biannual report that we issue. So this is a summary report, the most recent one from November, where we highlight all the different projects going on in the research and development department. So this time we highlighted about 25 different projects and programs. And so this report just has, short little summaries for each project and updates on our next steps. And now as part of this report, we always pick one project to include a research brief on. So a little more detail in a one-page summary, including some figures. And so this time we featured this project here, which we recently published, led by Julio Polanco in the R&D department, where we monitored the removal of SARS-CoV-2 virus genetic material during the OC Sanitation District municipal wastewater treatment steps, followed by our advanced purification process at groundwater replenishment system. And so we, confirmed our expectations that the virus, while detectable in the secondary effluent, that's the source water to our facility, we confirmed our expectations that it's completely removed to non-detect levels in our purified water. So we just published this study in a scientific journal as well. So this slide summarizes some of the outcomes of the group from the past approximately 6 months in terms of publications and conference activity and grants. We have 5 new publications, including 2 peer-reviewed articles in scholarly journals. We did 5 presentations and a poster at different conferences. So the first 2 columns there, publications and conferences, is just really all about making sure we share our work with other water agencies and the rest of the world and communicate all of our study outcomes and our hard work. And then in the last period, we also are happy to report some new grants that we've received. So our staff write proposals, often in collaboration with universities, technology providers, and other groups to submit proposals for competitive programs for research funding to organizations like the Water Research Foundation and others. So we recently got news of 5 different grants. Here on the, I know there's a lot of acronyms in this list, but the agencies or the funding agencies include Water Research Foundation, NAWI, which is the National Alliance for Water Innovation, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, and then different topics ranging from monitoring VOCs or volatile organic compounds with a new online real-time sensor to artificial intelligence, machine learning, that's the AIML for our plant, as well as PFAS work related to our managed aquifer recharge systems or MAR. And so here I just show the total award, which represents the overall grant to a multi-member collaborative team, and then showing the portion that comes to us for the tasks that we're going to be responsible for as part of the research scope. Sometimes we're the lead for these proposals. Other times we're and other times it's led by another party like a university, and we participate in the study. So for today's updates, I picked 3 projects just to briefly highlight to dig into a little more detail and show you what we found so far. Well, the first study has been completed, so that one's been published. So I'll share the final findings from that project. And then the other two projects shown here are still in progress. So I'll give some updates on how we're doing. So the first project was about understanding what influence this epoxy lining project had on the water quality in terms of clogging potential of the advanced purified water from GWRS that goes through our GWRS pipeline to deliver the water to injection wells and to recharge basins. And here you can see a picture of District Engineer Audrey Perry standing inside this really large pipeline in the portion that was coated with epoxy on the interior. So this study was led by Christine Pham in the R&D department. And you can see on the map there, the orange line shows where this pipeline is that takes the advanced purified water from GWRS facility up to Anaheim, where it goes into spreading ponds or recharge basins. And then along the way, some of this water is also brought to the mid-basin region injection wells. And so the goal of this study was to sort of seize the opportunity to evaluate clogging potential of the water before and after the epoxy lining was completed. We wanted to see, we had the hypothesis that doing this this lining would improve the water quality of the delivered water after it, you know, is conveyed through this pipeline in terms of compared to prior to the epoxy lining, which could provide a benefit to spreading ponds and injection wells in terms of less clogging potential for that water. So a little bit of background. This epoxy was applied back in 2018 to just the first portion, but a significant portion of this pipeline. The overall pipeline is about almost 14 miles in length, and the interior of the pipeline was coated with this epoxy in the first reach, which is about 4 miles. Otherwise, it's a cement mortar lined pipe on the interior. So now just this first reach has this additional interior layer over the CML of epoxy. And we did that because there has been some deterioration of this CML in this pipe. So it's a, this project was really driven by asset protection. Amazingly, even this water being so pure actually means it's kind of corrosive to the cement mortar lining. So it has deteriorated a little bit according to some of the inspections that have been done. So that's why the epoxy coating was done. But we imagined that this project may have also improved the ultimate quality of the water that's delivered to injection and recharge sites. So we actually set up some soil column studies where the soil column is kind of a proxy for recharge basins. And that's the data shown on the right. But first on the left there is just a photograph of the interior of the pipe before and after the coating. So these soil columns data is shown here. It's a whole bunch of trials done over a really long period of time on the x-axis there. And the y-axis is essentially the, well, it's the relative hydraulic conductivity of the soil column, which gave us a measure of basically how easily the water passes through the soil columns, expecting that you'll get some clogging over time and that flow will slow down. So in the green, that's our reference case where if we take the purified water directly from the plant before it even goes into any pipeline, and we do these soil column measurements of the hydraulic conductivity, then we see that there's always a little bit of clogging, but it sort of steadies out and we can continue passing water through these columns for a very long time because the water is so pure and it has basically no clogging potential. Unfortunately, when this pure water traverses a concrete or a cement mortar lined pipe, it is gonna pick up some particles and bacteria just naturally through that pipe. And so it's going to increase its clogging potential somewhat. And we see that in the purple line where when we ran the soil columns at the mid-basin injection well site, so we are feeding pipeline water that's the purified water, but after it's gone through 4 miles of the CML pipe, when we feed that into the columns, you can see that obvious difference where it has a lot like worse clogging potential. It's still very pure water. The data kind of exaggerates the issue, but it does have more clogging potential. So interestingly, after we reran the columns after the epoxy lining project was done, that's the orange data. So you can see how much the clogging potential was improved, but it was interesting that it wasn't fully restored back to, the reference case of water directly from the plant before entering the pipeline in green. So overall, the project showed that beyond the initial, the immediate driver of asset protection, that an additional benefit, there is an additional benefit of epoxy coating for advanced purified water facilities to essentially maintain that, that high water quality that has very low clogging potential. And here's the publication that we put together on the project and published back in November. All right, this next project is still ongoing. This is our pilot study of the flow reversal RO technology. This project is a pilot of a technology meant to increase the water recovery from the plant's reverse osmosis process. We have funding from the Southern California Salinity Coalition and the Bureau of Reclamation. Previously, we piloted closed circuit RO and forward osmosis RO. So this is kind of the next chapter in our ongoing search for effective technologies to squeeze more water out of the RO process. The current RO process has about an 85% recovery, meaning that of the feed water that goes into it, we make 85% of that into the purified water. And the rest is concentrate that gets discharged as a waste stream. So what's different about flow reversal RO is essentially a plumbing and kind of valves change to the system. So in conventional RO, if you look at the top portion of this drawing, that's a RO pressure vessel, and the feed water comes in this drawing on the right-hand side, where it says in green, undersaturated. And then it always flows in that same direction here from right to left down the vessel and makes the permeate and the concentrate at the end. But in flow reversal RO, through some creative plumbing and addition of valves, it can now come in on the other end at different times. So for maybe 2 hours, it might come from right to left, but then for the next 2 hours, left to right. So that's called the changing the flow reversal or the feed flow direction in the pressure vessel. And there's another feature called block rotation, where the different stages of RO switch around in our three-stage process. So it's kind of just mixing things up and allowing flow of different saturation levels to come into different points. So how this would look at full scale is if we were happy with this technology and wanted to move forward, we could potentially retrofit the RO facility that we have currently to add the additional piping and valves that it would take to enable the flow reversal and the block rotation. Or we could leave the main plant alone and in theory construct a separate smaller RO plant that would just receive the RO concentrate from our facility to try to squeeze more water out of it using this flow reversal technology. So we can think of that like a fourth stage treatment system. Here's the project team, Han, Don, and Andrew in the R&D department. Here's some photographs of the pilot set up in our RO building. It's a 30 GPM or gallons per minute pilot. And this data shows how we did in terms of the recovery we were able to achieve. So the x-axis shows that we trialed for about a year, different set points, recoveries, and cleaning formulations for the membranes. And this phase of the study, we were feeding the microfiltration effluent from our facility. So that's basically the RO feed. So imagining what if our RO plant was, you know, had this flow reversal and a block rotation mode enabled. And we were able to get up to 89%. So the goal here was to push recovery up to determine the max. And we did achieve stable performance at the 89% to 90% range. So again, for comparison, our main RO plant currently has a recovery of about 85%. So now we've reconfigured the pilot to trial that other scenario where what if we use this technology to treat RO concentrate from the plant as more of a fourth stage RO system to squeeze more water out. And so we've only been running in this mode for about 3 weeks now, and so far achieving about 30% recovery, treating the RO concentrate as a feed. After we finish this phase, we'd actually like to go back to the previous mode where we were feeding plant MF effluent, or also called RO feed, to the pilot, because we recognize that after the final expansion, we now have a different feed water quality where we're bringing in a different wastewater treatment plant's secondary effluent and blending it in. So we do need to kind of confirm our findings of 89 or 90% recovery from the previous test for this new, probably more challenging feed water. All right, so the last project I want to highlight is one of our PFAS projects. We are working on evaluating laboratory scale or bench scale methods that we could use to test out and find the best adsorbents that we could use to remove PFAS in the different treatment systems that we're building around North and Central Orange County with the producers. That technology is an adsorption-based technology. And kind of the most reliable current way of really getting good information on how well a particular adsorbent media works is to do a pilot. But this is pretty time consuming and so more expensive to do a full on pilot scale test. It takes at least a year. The photograph on the left shows our pilot from our first phase of piloting when we looked at granular activated carbon and some ion exchange products. And we still are running this pilot in additional phases, looking at more types of media, more types of adsorbents, but it is very time consuming. And in the industry and in the research space, there's new ideas about these smaller scale methods that could be done in a laboratory and be over and be finished in just a few days or a few weeks. And ultimately a pilot is still gonna be the most representative of a full scale treatment system. You're simulating it, but on a smaller scale, but these laboratory tests may be able to give you a very similar prediction at much less cost and with less time. So of course we want to prove that through a validation study to see if any of the available laboratory methods are sufficiently predictive of full-scale systems and pilots. So we're working with WQTS and Jacobs as our project partners. We were able to secure funding through a grant proposal to the Water Research Foundation. There's also eight different co-funders contributing funds, including the district. So we have three different laboratory methods that we're testing, recirculating column isotherm, rapid small scale column test, and bottle point isotherm. So these are just different approaches with different procedures, and we're comparing them against one another, but for two different adsorbent types, ion exchange and an alternative adsorbent. And we're doing this more pretty systematically for four different waters, so four different test sites where there's pilot or full-scale data available. And we basically want to see if the media life that's predicted by the lab methods matches the media life that was shown in the more representative pilot or the actual full-scale system. So far, we've completed just a first round of testing, and we're going to do at least three or four more. And the first round does suggest good performance for two of the three laboratory methods. Here's Mita Panu pictured, who's the lead in R&D for this project. So she's been working closely with WQTS and Jacobs. I won't go into the detail too much here on the graph, but it's just to say that method number one, shown as the colorful curves, did compare really well to the pilot, which is the little gray X's there. You can see the lines pretty much overlapping. So it pretty well predicted what the pilot showed. But the RSSET only took 3 weeks to get, and the pilot, I think that's something like 2 years worth of data there. Method two, the BPI, is sort of overlaid on the graph as the yellow portion, but it does also show pretty good prediction, pretty close match to the pilot. Method three, the recirculating column isotherm, did not work out. I didn't show the data here. So this is kind of exciting because maybe a couple of these methods could be really promising. And if so, we'd like to learn how to run them in-house, potentially in our R&D department, to provide this information going forward for new potential treatment sites around the area, different production wells, and for new medias that come into the market that could be promising. But I'm gonna, try to hold my excitement until we finish a couple more rounds and really prove to ourselves that it's working well. And my last slide here is just to note again that we're still continuing with the pilot. It's how we've been trialing different new medias as they come onto the market. So we're currently in kind of a phase three and four of different products that we're testing. So with that, if there's time, I can take any questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you for a good report, Dr. Plumlee. Do we have any questions? Not seeing any hands.
No hands raised.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Megan.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we'll move on to Our action agenda. Oh, wait a minute. You have something else than I do. Okay. PFAS update.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. We do have a short PFAS update, and we're going to kick it off with Jason Dadakis, and then he'll be followed by Chris Olson. So, Jason.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. Brief regulatory update for me to kick things off. On the state of California side of things, we wanted to let the board know about the district's laboratory and water quality departments have begun the required testing for the new PFAS monitoring orders issued by the Division of Drinking Water. These were alluded to earlier by John Kennedy in his presentation. We don't have any official results yet. Expect those to start coming in towards the end of this week or early next week, and then we'll start reporting those out to the producers. We will certainly keep the board apprised of any significant new findings that come out of that newly required testing across the basin. On the federal side of things, we're still waiting for the formal proposed rule from EPA for National Primary Drinking Water Regulation. This was anticipated to be released at the end of the last calendar year based on public statements from EPA issued throughout last fall. However, as far as we can tell, it remains in interagency review between the White House Office of Management Budget and EPA. So ultimately, EPA has a statutory deadline to get this out under the Safe Drinking Water Act by March. So we're in basically a bit of a waiting game with EPA between now and then. That concludes my report, and I'll turn it over to Chris to provide an update on the construction of PFAS treatment systems in the basin.
Thanks, Jason, and good evening, Madam President. Members of the board, I would like to share my screen in just a second here. Thank you. Okay, our monthly update on construction and design. And as a reminder, we have 19 wells of our 58 in operation. We've shifted a little more into construction. There's 27 wells in construction and 12 still in the design phase. So this is Garden Grove, and I highlighted the two blue. Those are the two that are operational of our first contract with Garden Grove. And the remaining are wells 29, and then the Lamson Reservoir, which is one site at two wells, 23 and 28. These are very close. The well 29, it's complete. We had some of those early ons with the timing delays with the gas regulators. All that's been taken care of. They're in the flushing process of getting their pipes and vessels prepped, and we should be loading with resin later this month, February, and get that system up and running. Over at Lamson Reservoir for wells 23 and 28, it's close too. It might not look close on the picture on the left, but it's for the majority of it, it's there. That this is just the influent pipeline coming in, the vessel, the foundation, the pad being poured for that. So this one's also looking at possibly end of February into March, beginning of March, to get this thing up and running for Garden Grove. Over at East Orange County for their two wells at their one site, they've got, you can see the picture on the left. This is the influent and effluent valves on the process piping for the ion exchange vessels. And they're also doing some sewer installation on site work. So just part of the project, things are going along very quickly and on schedule over here. And we're looking at 3 to 4 months before they're up and running at East Orange. For IRWD's OPA 1 well, this is the one that's in the recessed pit because of the residents are surrounding. A foundation of it has been poured and they're prepping for the rebar on the sidewall. So a lot of work's been going into getting this going. It's been slowed with the rains that we've had, but now they're moving forward. And this one is expected probably more like late summer of this year to be up and running. At Anaheim, for their first phase, the phase A for the 8 wells, you know, we've got the three individual sites, La Palma, Energy Field, Boys and Park, and then the group of 5 wells around the Linda Vista site. Little update, they're going to be operational over at La Palma site next, or this, actually, I think it's this month. They're planning on this month, middle to end of this month for the La Palma site. At the Energy Field site, it's going to be a summertime operational. Here's a picture of the Linda Vista, just showing you the operations building and the vessels in the background. So this is the large site, a lot of work going on. That's the operations building. They're working on above ground piping. They're planning on getting water producing in April and May of this year. And then wrapping it up with the phase A, the Boys and Park is looking at the summer. So all of them for phase A to be online by the summertime. Then they have their phase B, which is the six wells at five sites. And the Santa Cruz site, if you look at the bottom, it's a combo of wells 60 and 61. That's referred to as the Santa Cruz site. So they've started work over there, the clearing and grubbing, getting the site prepped. At this site, these two wells also go into a new distribution line, which requires a jack and bore pipeline underneath the freeway. So they're starting that this week. So that's a big undertaking once those wells are operational to get it into distribution. And then also they've started over at the Brookhurst site, which is on the far left of the screen, just basic clearing and grubbing. But again, this is the phase B and it's starting up very quickly. So we're happy about that. And then they've got the other three sites, the downtown, the Willow Park, and the Catella, which will be starting in the next couple of months, but haven't started yet. Planning on being producing water this fall by the end of this year at all of the sites for Anaheim's phase B. Golden State has the two sites, the Bradford Well 4, Fairhaven 1 and 3. The last time we looked at this, I showed you vessels being installed at Bradford 4. Now it's a lot of work's been focused at the Fairhaven. So the underground piping is prepped. They're going to be putting in the rebar cages for the foundations, and then we'll get those vessels installed in the next couple months. This one at both sites, we're looking to be operational in the May timeframe. So moving very quickly. This is Fullerton, and we are looking at the main plant specifically. So this is for their two wells, 3A and 7A, Fullerton main plant for the granular activated carbon systems. And still in the beginning stages, right now what you see is the overex getting prepared for the vessel foundation, the concrete slabs over there. This one's still got a year. It's likely it's going to be operational by the end of this year. And then the balance, we have Tustin, that's the centralized plant for four wells. You know, we awarded that just a month and a half ago, and they're planning on mobilizing onto site in the next few weeks to get them going. We should be bidding out Orange Phase 2, which is three more wells, in about 2 weeks. Santa Ana has moved forward. Now we're at 90%. You're probably going to see me talking about going out to bid for them in about 1 to 2 months for Santa Ana for three wells. And that is the update. I can answer any questions.
Hey. Let's see. Nice report, Chris. I'm not seeing.
I'm sorry, I have a question.
Okay.
Madam President, I'm looking for my hand, but I apologize.
That's okay.
So thank you. I'm learning as, you know, I'm just starting. So I appreciate your patience with me, all of you. But the Santa Ana, the three wells, can you give me a timeline? I'm sure I missed that conversation months ago.
No problem. So the Santa Ana three wells, this is for, we have one, let me go back and just in case I didn't have it on the slide deck here. Santa Ana has one well that we've already built a treatment system for. It's the well 40 at Mayberry Park. Okay. It's just not operational because there's some components. We're waiting electrical components, but it's in the works to be in the next few months operational. These three wells are numbers 27, 28, and 31. There are going to be two separate packages for design. They're at 90%. We're moving forward. We'd probably be at 100% in about a month. And then once we do that, we'll advertise the construction contract. Takes about a 2 month period, and then we'll award it to get those three wells up and running.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll meet with Caesar too and get additional information. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Perfect.
Okay. Anybody else? Hey, thank you very much, Chris.
Sure.
Nice report. Thank you, Jason. Great report. Okay, let's move on to our action agendas. Groundwater replenishment system. All the information is contained in the packet. Retirement.
The information is contained as item 8 in the agenda. Thank you.
Okay. Joint planning. Everything is contained in the agenda. All right. Get back to our agenda. Do we have, I don't have a verbal report tonight. General Manager, do you?
Nothing to report this evening, Madam President.
Well, I guess we should tell them that last night we had a reception for the new chair of Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, Adan Ortega, who many of us know and are friends with. So we were very excited about that. Director's reports? Anybody?
Yes, me, yes. Dina Nguyen. Yes, I want to report that we had a tape parade and want to thank the board for supporting our sponsorship in the tape parade. We had a golf cart with 12 seats in it, and Director Rowe, myself, and Director Tran were part of the parade. And the seniors who were our guests, they were very appreciative that we have included them. And also my family was with us on the golf cart. Just again, that was one of the board's sponsorships. So I wanted to let everyone know how appreciative the Vietnamese American community is of that. And also personally myself, I'm very happy that all the directors supported that.
Nice. All right, General Counsel.
Yes, Madam President, no closed session this evening, and I have nothing further to report.
Okay, then we are adjourned. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.